News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It's 6:38, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. In the wake of last week's UK election outcome, there are growing calls for the likely Conservative minority government to roll back on its planned negotiating stance with the EU and to contemplate remaining within the customs union and even the single market. But to what degree is the UK business lobby now united in its objectives for the Brexit negotiations? John McGrain, Director General of the British-Irish Chamber of Commerce, joins us in studio. John, you are very closely viewing what's happening in the British business sector. Are they united? Because they weren't around the time of the Brexit vote.
Yeah, Vincent, good morning. So the British-Irish Chamber of Commerce represents businesses on both islands, north, south, east and west, concerned about the future of the two-way trade and the well-being of the people, the more than 400,000 people who have jobs that depend on that trade. And we've been following this, obviously, very closely since well before the referendum. It's a fact that the sentiment of British business, if you count the number of businesses overall, essentially reflects the sentiment of the British people. There are 5 million SMEs in the UK and several hundred thousand large corporates. Even in the large corporates, you'll find that while you can have a rational discussion about the economic effects, you'll still get a personal opinion in the conclusions to those discussions, which are individual emotions of individual people who feel just the way the UK did last year. 48% wanted to remain, 52% wanted to leave, and that reflects itself in the challenge facing business organisations to somehow reconcile the personal viewpoints of citizens with the businesses that they're running and the well-being of the people that they take care of.
So from your relationships with businesses large and small in the UK, where do you think they are positioned now? After the election, do you think they will unite, small and large, to push for a soft Brexit, or are those divisions as to the best outcome for Britain still very much there?
It's right up in the air. I mean, last week's debacle just adds more delay, more uncertainty, and no better clarity about exactly what sort of Brexit the UK wants, right across the spectrum, because, as I've been saying, it's a personal view, and there are many different shades of those personal views. If you look at the largest business organisation in the UK, the Federation of Small Businesses, it accounts for over 200,000 small firms and many more people associated with those. I mean, before the referendum, they were marginally for leaving as an organisation. And indeed, you'll find that most of the organisations in the UK essentially stood back from campaigning one way or the other because they knew they were split down the middle. Now, their position is they're all asking for a solution to the problem, but none of them are necessarily providing solutions. They want a trade deal. They want the right to free trade with the EU. They want free movement of selected staff, the skills they need, and they want free access to EU funding schemes continuity. But none of them are really coming up with the answer to the core problem behind the referendum, which is immigration. And there hasn't really been a debate about that at all so far.
And the EU, and we're learning from Brussels that they, you know, they may play hardball because they don't want to see a leaving a significant member getting too favourable a deal. But the free movement of people is going to be critical for them, isn't it?
It's the hard line on the EU 27 side, and of course it's a challenge for Ireland as one of the 27 to put its spoke in as a fully paid up member of the EU, which we are in every respect, loyal to the European Union, appreciative of its benefits, but very concerned about our ongoing, continuous value-creating relationship with the UK. And, you know, a solution is going to have to be found. So I think you'll find that where the game moves on to now, Vincent, is that business organisations like ourselves and the British-Irish Chamber, working with like-minded organisations in Ireland and in the UK, will try and move the game forward to put practicable solutions on the table so that EU law still prevails, but we find our way through the labyrinth of EU law to find the ways and means around the different things that business is going to have to put on the table for the EU diplomats and negotiators to say, okay, we hear your case and we see how you're planning to do that. So, for instance, things about how open border could work, where borders might lie, how free trade and free movement of people can work. So, for instance, in Belgium, they have managed free movement of people. If I go to Belgium, you go to Belgium this evening as an EU citizen, you can pitch up there like anybody else from the EU, but in 3 months' time, they'll ask you to move on if you haven't got a job. Nobody's had that conversation in the UK, nor indeed on the EU side of the argument. And I think you'll find that business will begin to mobilise some of those practicable solutions over the coming weeks and months.
What's your own view, and what's the view of your members each side of the Irish Sea as to whether a soft Brexit now, perhaps some sort of retention in the single market, or at least the customs union, is now more likely because of the election?
It is less unlikely, but I'd caution against being moving too quickly to a state that says, you know, the trouble is over here. Even a soft Brexit is a worse situation than the status quo, and we shouldn't forget that. Anything that disrupts the continuity of free-flowing trade and the employment that that sustains is a bad outcome. Obviously, the harder edge has gone off it because Mrs. May doesn't have the mandate to take that through Parliament, but Parliament itself and the people behind all of that process, right down to constituency level, need to have a conversation about what kind of Brexit the UK wants and what that means in terms of the negotiating position on free movement of people.
Are you encouraged by reports like the front page of the Telegraph today that, there is now cross, or there seems to be, if you can take the report at face value, there seems to be cross-party, senior cross-party discussions about the need for a soft Brexit or to try and get there?
Yes, you'd have to be encouraged by that. Anything is possible in politics, including complete U-turns, as we know. So, you know, our job from the business side of things in an organisation like the British Irish Chamber of Commerce is to be in practical support of politicians who have a tough job to do to evolve their position towards what we really need to get to over the next while to sustain jobs and well-being, the length and breadth of the two islands.
And will you be in Westminster yourself sometime soon in pushing forward that lobbying campaign?
I'm personally in Westminster this Thursday working as closely as we can with policymakers and politicians to help them to find practical ways, because it's a tough job. They have to do it. We have to help them to get to the right spot.
Okay, John McGrane, and the best of luck with that. John McGrane, Director General of the British Irish Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, AIB published its near 700-page prospectus after close of business last night and ahead of its planned IPO on the London and Dublin markets in about 10 days' time. Stephen Hall, banking analyst with Cantor Fitzgerald, joins us now on the line. Stephen, thanks for taking our call. A busy night last night reading that tome, I suspect. No major surprises in your view?
Not really, to be honest. So what effectively happened, they published their very detailed 700-page equity prospectus, which ultimately sets out the pricing range for the upcoming IPO in 2 weeks' time. So the equity sale, the pricing range has been set between €3.90 to €4.90 a share. So taking the midpoint of that range will be €4.40, which would leave the bank with a market cap of about €12 billion. So, which was broadly expected by the market in recent weeks.
And of course, we'll need to see what the level of appetite over the next 10 days is as to where that price will land. And we might talk about that in a minute, Stephen. But I think the only principal surprise, without taking the sting out of the story for us, was perhaps the timing of the issue of the prospectus last night. The view over the weekend was that it might be delayed for a few days to see how the outcome of the UK election settled down.
Exactly, yeah. So last Friday, the UK general election, that was clearly a shock to the market. However, Michael Noonan, he's clearly been happy with the level of investor appetite in recent weeks. So the co-leads who've been appointed by the Department of Finance to sell this equity sale, they've obviously received positive feedback on the AIB investment case story, which has been which is quite a compelling case at this point in time. So it certainly was a risk, and it caught the market a bit of surprise, I guess, yesterday.
He may, of course, have wanted to launch the prospectus before he steps down later today as well. Although I suppose we shouldn't infer any base motives to him. At the midpoint of about €12 billion valuation for the 25% stake, Stephen, is that more or less in line with the valuations for European banks generally, somewhere close to book value?
It's actually a bit of a premium. So, at about a €12 billion valuation, it would set the bank at roughly about a 1.05 times price to book valuation. When you compare that to its closest peer, which would be Bank of Ireland, that has derated in recent weeks. That's roughly trading at about 0.83 times price to book, and the broader European financial sector is trading at roughly about 0.9 times price to book. So ultimately, in Michael Noonan's opinion, it's his duty to extract as much value from this equity sale for the Irish taxpayer, ultimately, because we are the owners of the bank at this point in time. So the last thing he wants to do is sell us off cheaply and get criticised. So, it seems to be fairly valued at the moment, but I still expect investor demand to be quite strong. The investment case is quite compelling. It's returned to sustainable profitability. it's completely de-risked its balance sheet over the past several years. It's already repaid a dividend. And in the equity perspective, last night it outlined plans to sell or to pay a further dividend in 2018 relating to 2017's financial performance. And then one key selling point will be reduced Brexit risk when you compare it to its closest rival bank, which would be Bank of Ireland. So AIB would have roughly 15% loan exposure to the UK, whereas Bank of Ireland would have a much higher exposure to in the region of about 40%. So I guess that would be a key differentiator between the 2 points from here.
And I suppose a critical factor as well, and we know prospectuses outline every possible risk that might be out there in the short to mid-term, Stephen, but there were no risks that a man on a flying horse wouldn't have picked out anyway.
Not really. So, yeah, as you said, the key focus of this prospectus would be they really give an in-depth overview of all the risks, every possible risk that AIB could face, which would include potential downturn in the Irish or UK economy, if there was further external geopolitical events. They also mentioned last Thursday's UK general election as a potential risk in the medium term. If there is a reduction in trade between Ireland and the UK, this could impact Irish GDP as well. They even go on to say that even in the case of a rising interest rate environment, which would be profitable for the bank, there could be an adverse impact on the level of non-performing loans as the interest rates increase, and possible customers might not be able to repay their balance, their terms of their loans. And then finally, the big risk will be its exposure to the Irish property market. We all know how notoriously cyclical the Irish property market has been in recent years. So it does have heavy exposure to Irish mortgage market. And if there was a severe downturn in investor sentiment towards Irish property, then AIB would be heavily exposed in that scenario.
Okay, Stephen, but of course that's probably its greatest asset at the moment as well. But thanks indeed for giving us that insight, Stephen. Stephen Hall, banking analyst with Cantor Fitzgerald. Now, coming up, Rory Gillen on markets. Stay tuned. It's 6:54 and Rory Gillen of Gillen Markets joins us. Rory, we might come to your view on AIB in a minute, but markets and tech stocks in particular have been sliding since Friday. Anything particular behind it, or is it clear?
No, I don't think it's clear, Vincent. I think, the technology sector has been on a hell of a tear. And, markets ebb and flow. And you could say that the Nasdaq index is, well above its trend. And that trend is upwards. Anybody who's sensible would be always nervous about valuations. But in terms of buying power, I don't think you'd call the end of it just because you see a correction. It's more like a correction back to the mean, reversion to the mean. You won't know if there's a deeper correction coming until a little bit more. On the economic side, things look to be fine. Certainly in the US,
Now, but you had an interesting argument in your Gillen Markets weekly publication on Saturday, whereby frequently, judging by history, if US Treasury bills, if US short-term interest rates go up by 0.75% in a 12-month period, it's generally a signal, or has been generally a signal, to sell stocks. And it looks like the Fed is going to raise them by another 0.25% on this week, which would bring us to a three-quarter point.
Yeah. Yeah, and certainly if history's the guide, but history, it's always a guide until it isn't. And, there are mitigating circumstances this time, which is interest rates are so low that really the last couple of interest rate rises haven't had any meaningful impact on the economy. And they're not trying to slow the economy. It's just a sort of bit of normalization. And interest rates elsewhere, for example, the interest rates on corporate bonds haven't been rising, and that would be an offsetting factor this time around, Vincent. So,
and that's an indicator that investors believe there is substance to the profitability story in corporates.
Yeah, they're not overly concerned, and they're not putting a premium on interest rates charged to corporates just yet. There's a premium there anyway, but it's not rising, and so it's there's conflicting signals as always, but you'd keep an eye on these things nonetheless.
and China, just the credit situation in China is another one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for your listeners, I mean, it's very unusual to have a situation, which we've had all year. I mean, it's June now, so it's not new. Vincent, this would have been a trend since the beginning of the year that long-term interest rates in China are below short-term interest rates. And of course, China is a managed economy, so you never know whether that is a parallel that is comparable to other markets, because it clearly in the US or in emerging markets in general or in Europe, if long-term interest rates are below short-term interest rates, what it's telling you is that central banks are raising rates to try and cool an economy, but the market believes that they'll be successful. Mm. And that often is a signal of recession. Is it a signal of an impending recession in China? You know, possibly. Yeah, I mean, it's a warning signal.
We don't have enough clarity on it, I suppose.
I think not yet. And because it's a managed economy, don't forget China has no external debt. So it's not like the rest of us. But they have a lot of debt. And so it's always hard to know. But again, another warning signal, sort of yellow flags, you know.
Won't come in time, hopefully, for the IPO of AIB. It's going to be priced next Thursday night and start trading conditionally. It's planned Friday week. At a mid-price range of about 12 billion euro, it looks fairly priced?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you know, the Irish economic story is still a good one, and they're back to their core. If you look at the AIB, the asset side of their balance sheet, it's 43% below where it was in 2007. That means they've contracted heavily, they've raised a lot of capital. And, you know, they're in position to weather the storms that they weren't previously. So the market always reassesses things completely differently. It's a fresh piece of paper. It does. I mean, you know, practically speaking, because it's the government selling the first 25% tranche, you'd say they'll err on the conservative side, I think, with this valuation. And they will listen to investors, not like GPA in 1992.
Now, there is a history lesson. Mm. Rory Gillen of Gillen Marcus, thanks as always for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. I'll be back with Bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. If you miss any of the show, you can catch us on newstalk.com. The podcast will be up later. But back to this morning, and after the traffic news, it's over to Paul and Shane with all the stories of the morning on Newstalk Breakfast. Stay with us.